Oh, hello, the internet, and welcome to season 33. That's Little Larry Bird season, episode 4 of the Daily Zeitgeist for June 1st, 2018. My name is Miles Gray, aka It's Okay to Be Miles. Thank you so much to Mr. Prince's Shave for that timely aka based off that terrible White NASA song from yesterday. And I am thrilled to be joined by my co-host today, the wonderful Jamie Loftus. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, this is Jamie Loftus, aka Chief Leech.
Okay, there you go.
Chief Leech.
How are your leeches? All dead?
No, one died a couple nights ago. And then we got three kicking.
Three good.
Still barfing up my blood.
Yeah.
Into their little cylindrical container. It's great.
So you're still leech. So leech protective services won't have to come and take them away from you.
No. They're dying at a normal pace.
Okay, good. Not mysteriously.
Like you would say of your children. My children are dying at an actually totally normal pace.
Okay.
They are throwing up my blood.
Okay, well, guess what, Jamie? We are joined by a great man. A very intelligent man. I don't even know what to call you. A journalist, writer, author.
One of the greats.
One of the greats. Just a man who has shown light upon dark corners of history for me. The one and only Robert Evans. Hello, Robert.
You're setting up an unrealistic expectation for me here today.
No. That's true, Robert.
I mean, I woke up thinking it was Thursday.
I think we all did. Of what year, though?
That
might be a problem then. See, are you time traveling?
All I gotta say is I'm a big fan of President Ford.
Oh boy. Okay.
Call
the time police. Yes, Robert. You also host Behind the Bastards.
I sure do
on this network. Mm-hmm. My episode hasn't come out yet.
You're the first person I've ever met that we've immediately talked about Saddam Hussein for 2 hours.
Really? That doesn't happen to you all?
No. I feel
like
no.
That sounds like something, a story you would have, though.
First, but hopefully not the last.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to have Miles translate his... There's a Japanese translation of one of his books.
Oh,
so,
shoot.
Oh, good.
One of these days.
I would love nothing more than to comb the pages of a Japanese translated Saddam Hussein romance. But that episode, is that out yet? Not out yet.
No. The Eric Prince one or the Saddam one?
No, the Saddam one.
The Saddam one's
Saddam
out.
One. Oh, that's one of the first ones. Yes.
Yeah, we dropped that one. Yeah.
Peep that one. Mine with Eric Prince, not out yet.
Famous erotic novels.
Yes. Well, Robert, tell me something. Tell us something. Tell the Zeit Gang something from your search history. I didn't even tell you. See?
Okay.
But I like how you're thinking. What's
so
something
like,
from search history?
So like, every now and then, like over the years, I've on and off brewed beer and distilled liquor and stuff.
Like Hophead?
No, just like when I was like 19, I couldn't buy alcohol, but you can go to a beer store when you're 19, you can make it.
Studious.
Beer store? What are you, Canadian?
What?
Beer store?
Like a brewing store.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was looking at getting back into it because it's been like a year or two since I've brewed anything. And like, so I started like looking up recipes. And then by the end of the night, I was trying to figure out if it's possible to distill liquor from blood, human blood. And it turns out there's a lot of discussion about this on the internet.
Whoa.
Because it's not possible with just straight blood if you just bleed into a thing, because your blood has a lot of fat, so the fat's going to go bad.
Not my blood. My blood's very thin.
Fat-free.
My blood's very thin.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Said it so intensely, but we will believe you, okay? So just please stop clenching your fists. My blood thin.
Yeah, I'll trust the leeches on that.
Yeah.
So it turns out if you want to turn human blood into liquor, you got to do a couple of things. Number one, you got to remove the red blood cells.
Okay.
Because they're really iron heavy, so they're going to make your blood liquor taste like metal,
like a bunch
which you
of
don't
pennies,
want.
Yeah.
Yeah, which means the downside of that is if you're going to make good alcohol out of blood, it's not going to be red. Which is a bummer, because I feel like if
you're just
drinking
water,
I want the dream is to have get one of those Dan Aykroyd skull vodka bottles and fill it with red liquor that you made out of your own blood. That would be cool.
So your dream is to drink a skull bottle of your own blood vodka.
It's not my dream. I just wanted to know if I could do it.
If it's possible.
It's like when you read about how to disable a tank or something, just to know, or how to trap human beings in the jungle.
Right. These are thoughts we have.
I know how to set up a punji pit. I know how to put some compi in a sock with some axle grease and throw up on the thing. I've seen Saving Private Ryan, okay?
Yeah. So that's what you do.
So to separate the red blood cells, what do you need, a centrifuge or something?
Somebody figured it out online. There was a phlebotomist who's also a brewer who was like, these are the steps you'd need to do in order to get the red blood cells out. And then there's There's another way you've got to like separate the fats, but like it's theoretically possible. You
I'd
would
imagine,
need a lot
yeah.
of blood.
Probably freeze it, right? And wouldn't the fat kind of get to the top? And you can kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
Out, like,
you could
it?
You could do yeah. it that way, or you could just get the plasma. Just the plasma would work fine.
Okay.
So if we could get a large quantity of blood plasma,
how much blood are we talking?
You would probably want a gallon or two. Because
oh,
it wouldn't be
okay.
the. It depends on whether or not you're trying to make an alcohol that includes blood, in which case a gallon, a half gallon even, would probably be good.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to make straight liquor out of blood, in which case you're going to need a lot more blood.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, something to think about, y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a good group project. Might be like a cool yeah, retreat for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Just do some bloodletting.
Zeitgang bloodletting and liquor making.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll start a thread.
Well, Robert, aside from regular liquor, what do you think is something that's overrated?
Something that's, oh yeah, telling people with horrible, problematic drug and alcohol addictions to sober up. And this is actually based a little bit on something we were talking about on the Saddam podcast. Like, what if somebody had just given that guy Vicodin when he was young? I feel like we always encourage people who have horrible drug problems to get better. But there's all these people, like the guy who founded ISIS, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, was an alcoholic and a drug addict for most of his young life. And then he went straight and he bought into religion. And
he really
cleaned
found God.
Up his act. And then he's cutting people's heads off. What if we just kept giving that guy drugs?
Right.
Like,
ooh, wow.
I feel like it's irresponsible. Some people, absolutely, the individual is always healthier without a crippling drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're trying to decide,
well,
when you're trying to decide, okay, should I encourage this person to sober up? You have to ask, what are the chances he becomes a terrorist or a dictator?
Right.
Because like it's not a zero sum game.
Right.
Some people who sober up will then use their newfound productivity to be terrible.
Right, right.
It's
yeah.
a good additional question to add to any intervention of like,
yeah.
okay, just full disclosure: if we take away your Mike's Hard Lemonade, will you become a terrorist?
Yes. Okay, here's
yes.
your Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Here's a 12 pack.
Oh, great, great, great.
Problem
I said whatever I had
That's
to get my
That's enough black cherry flavor to kill you.
Yeah, that is weird. You know, like at what point do we play God with people who go, I'm sorry, I can tell you're about to be a problematic terrorist if you get sober, so I'm going to just keep enabling you.
Yeah. Well, and people always talk about, well, if you could go back in time and kill
if
Hitler or Stalin, you don't even
time.
Have to kill them. Just go back in time and give them, like, painkillers. I feel like that's usually the solution.
Is
like
that
a shitload of oxy.
Opioids, yeah. That could be a new cartoon you could work on, Robert, is about a time-traveling history enthusiast who goes back in time and sprinkles opioids to people who should never come to power and just kind of keep them locked down in drugs.
You seem angry, guy.
Yeah.
Try these.
Try these. One of these.
Be
make
an easy project to get fully sponsored.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Purdue Pharmaceuticals. Brought to you by Purdue Pharmaceuticals. Oh, shit. Robert, what is something that is underrated?
Underrated. Oh, food poisoning's underrated.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm on board with this.
Yeah,
go
so I had an eating contest recently. I have a friend. And
is that what you call dinner?
Huh? No. It was this was a contest of wills. We went to the Bellagio Buffet in Las Vegas, and we ate. They had a bunch of great food because it's the Bellagio Buffet, but they also had a giant thing of rancid mussels that were like cold, and from the first bite we knew were bad. And so we had an eating contest of rancid mussels to see who could consume the most of these mussels.
So you just willingly ruined your own vacation?
Yeah, well, it was the end of the vacation.
Oh, okay.
It was like the day after was terrible.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, so you literally say, you're looking at your friend, you say, these mussels have gone the fuck off.
Well, we said,
how
let's
many
do a mussel
eat?
Eating contest, and we realized the mussels were bad, but at that
oh,
point,
you didn't
whoever
start off
had
saying,
backed
let's
off
have
was
a let's have a rancid mussel eating contest.
No.
You're like, let's have a mussel eating contest, and then by three, you're like, oh, these are fucked up.
No, by
you're
the
like,
by the we by the time we saw them, we could tell they were bad, and by the first bite, they were clearly turned. But, I mean, that didn't stop us.
Yo,
okay, so.
New band, Turned Muscle.
Yeah. Turned Muscle. Turned Muscles.
Turned Muscles.
Wait, and then how did it all end? Just
I mean,
with you?
I won. I ate about 250 of them. He ate a little over 200. And then we were both horribly ill for a couple of days. But, so the reason I feel like the,
what's the underrated part?
Okay. So everybody's laughing at old Matt for getting horribly sick eating hundreds of rancid mussels now. But if the nukes go off tomorrow and everybody's scrambling around in the dust trying to survive and you're all eating bad food and getting sick, I'll be eating whatever the hell I want because my stomach's trained. Like
so
I ate 250 bad mussels and I was only sick for a day. So I feel like my
That's
guts
impressive.
Are ready for the end of days.
Okay.
And other people's aren't because they just eat food that human beings should eat rather than rancid
right,
mussels.
Right, right, right. So get yourself used to that fucked up food.
That's exactly. That's why we should all be on a steady diet of old mussels and 7-Eleven sushi.
And mm-hmm. in a way, Robert, I feel like you played yourself because I just hang out at the back of Bellagio and I'm catching those mussels for free. So, but guys, the official stance of the Daily is like, guys, do not eat rancid food, even if you think it will prepare you for the coming nuclear apocalypse, which, by the way, might be a while. You might look like a fool because super producer Nick Stumpf just held up a sign and said, the North Korea summit is back on. So we'll see. Although, who knows where that'll go, because I'm pretty sure Kim Jong-un only wants his photo with Donald Trump to make himself look more legitimate, and then he'll be like, fuck out of here, I'm not giving you my nukes.
Yeah, so. I feel like we just got to ignore all news about North Korea until they're actually, we get that picture of the two of them posing awkwardly together. Well, then I'll
Well, and like actual people, outside observers going to verify the process of denuclearization. But I just don't think that will happen. But anyway, you have to tell me, what's a myth? Oh, that people get wrong?
The cops are helpful.
That cops are helpful.
Yeah, that there's a benefit to most people in them.
Okay,
because I feel like, okay, so I've had a number of situations in my life where it's like the situation where like, oh boy, you'll be glad for cops when this happens to you, when you get robbed or when someone threatens you or when you're, and every time that I've gone to the police, it's just been sitting around for hours and then nobody helps you. Like I've had shit stolen from me. I've had people through. Like they don't do the stuff that people expect them to do.
Yeah, there's sometimes right.
Yeah,
I think sometimes people can be surprised at how inept the police can be. Like for example, when we were in this exact building, the cops heard that someone may have had a gun, and they basically like locked our building down. And from what we could tell, looking outside with like the clusterfuck of police, no one could agree on what to do. And we were like trapped in here for hours because they were just like, I think there's a gun in there. Then they roughed a dude up, man of color, who didn't have a gun.
Yeah.
So it was just like, and I had to wait 4 hours because like apparently everyone was saying who was in within earshot of the police. They were like, three people were arguing over whose jurisdiction it was or who, like how they were going to address the situation.
Some who's on first shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think in general, I think the concept of law enforcement is good because we need laws. But as we see in our day-to-day lives with just even what's going on in D.C., law enforcement is a very flexible term.
It's and sometimes, I mean, it's like it can be so blatantly horrible, but it's sort of like what you're describing is like just everyday inefficiency and like cluelessness, where a couple weeks ago I had done a stand-up show near my house. I was walking home and there was like a police officer stationed somewhere. He like pulled up to me and he was like, hey, it's pretty late. I was like,
oh god.
I know. I was like,
you're like, you gonna protect me or what the fuck?
Right. I was just like, yeah, I know. And then he's like, you close to home? I was like, yeah, pretty close. He's like, okay, because there have been some rapes in this neighborhood. There have been some rapes. I was just like, okay, so why are you slowing me down?
Yeah, like, so are you going to give me a ride home?
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
And at this point, I'm not getting this guy's fucking car.
Yeah.
And he was just like, well, there have been some rapes in this neighborhood, so something for you to know. I was like, okay, are you going to? Like, what are you?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
It was, he slowed me down on my way home to inform me that people had been raped recently.
I was
like, yeah, okay.
I'm sure in his mind he's like, I'm arming them with knowledge.
I think in his mind he's flirting with you. I think that's how I think that's how cops.
Yo, the other day I was at the movie theater and there was a cop like blocking like the like exit to the parking lot because this woman was just talking to him, and when we walked by, like he was like, oh, he's like, you Mexican? And she was like, no. And like that's the one liner, and I'm like, yo, bro, you're flirting with this woman, and you're holding up the parking lot, and then guessing her ethnicity, like, and but she was like
that's
with it. She's like, no,
cop shit of all time.
Yeah, I was like, it seemed like the scene of like a heist movie where it's like the woman goes to distract the cop, like with like feminine intrigue, like that kind of thing, because like it was perfectly like woman leaned into the thing, and the cop was like so oblivious to everything.
Like early Ocean's 11 bullshit kind of moves. Yeah, it's I like that cops flirt with you by reminding you that they're a cop.
Yeah, right. Like, and that they know where the real crimes go down.
Right.
Hey, you know I have a legally unrestrained right to use a gun.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, you ever had any...
Whatever I want.
I'm here to prevent rapes by slowing women down.
You ever take a shot of blood vodka? I got some. Just frisk down a freak with some of it.
I got a gallon of my blood in the backseat.
Just get fucked up, huh? I'm about to be off in a second. Anyway, let's get get into it. Let's get into the news today. It's June 1st, which means, hey, it's Pride Month, y'all. Shout out to everybody out there celebrating Pride, all the LGBTQIA. Also, today is National Donut Day. I don't know if anyone cares. No?
That's, I mean, kind of the same day.
That's a loftist thing. You are a big fan of donuts. I know the second I said that, you were like, is Dunkin' doing anything?
Is Dunkin' participating in any way? Yeah.
And are they or no?
They are, but you gotta buy a drink. Which triggered and upset. No.
Wait, buy a drink and what? Get like one donut?
And you get a free donut. Mm. That's kind of nice.
How much is a drink, though?
Well, it depends if you're hitting like specials.
$1.99
What if you're hitting that culotta?
Yeah, if you're doing culotta, if you're getting medium culotta, that's like $3.49. That's kind of dark.
Jesus
that's,
Christ.
Culotta is like special occasion shit. When I got the talk when I was both
about
11,
being a young black man in America and how to dress to talk with police?
Yes, that's when you get talk. The culotta.
Oh, it's the talk is different for everybody. Okay,
my mom parked in a Dunkin' Donuts when I was really young, and she was just like, go get yourself a medium culotta. I was like, I've never had a medium culotta before. She's like, yeah, we can't afford medium culottas. But then she told me what sex was.
Wow.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like how, yeah, you think of culotta, you're like, the sex talk. Big
like,
moments.
I was like, whoa, this tastes like knowledge.
Also, if we don't know, Mr. Donald Trump.
Oh,
now, he proclaimed June 2018 as African American Music Appreciation Month. Thanks to the, quote, contagious rhythm in African-American music, bringing people of all backgrounds together. So, I mean, sure, great. It's a little cringy coming from racist-in-chief Donald Trump. But also, I guess it makes sense, too, because his best friend Kanye West dropped a little album last night, or today, technically, called Ye. I've been listening to it. And we'll probably get into a little bit more about the actual album itself on Monday when Jack is back, when he's done with his experiment. But I don't know. Have you guys listened to it? Have you heard anything?
No.
I've listened to most of it. I haven't gotten all the way through it. I like that he opted to make his album art a straight-up nihilist meme.
Right. Describe for the people, if they haven't seen the album art yet, what we're looking at.
Picture of mountains in Wyoming that apparently he took on the way, and then some little MS Paint handwritten shit over it saying, I hate being bipolar. It's awesome. Which could so easily be a Garfield t-shirt. It blows my fucking mind.
Right.
Oh, no. I hate being bipolar.
It's awesome.
Whoa. It's like, wow, some real mid-aughts realness you're serving there. I don't know. I like that. I mean, most of the album deals with like his mental illness. So that's.
Yeah, he mentions it. He mentions it a lot.
Yeah. And also, I mean, and he has a straight up peer t-shirt, you know, I hate being bipolar. It's awesome.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I was hoping that maybe he would address his fucked up worldview in this, but I guess not.
No.
We can't expect that from somebody who has actual functionally no political awareness. But hey, good marketing plan, because you had everybody talking about it, and now like when like people like Slate are like going over your pouring over your album in every possible way. You've done some genius marketing there, my man.
I just can't wait for the next time like I'm talking about being bipolar and I now have like a brand new line to use. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you co-opt it. See, watch out though, because first fucked with the Olympics committee. You don't want the fucking Yeezy stans coming after you. That would be amazing though if you could somehow bait
get
Kanye
shut
West
down
into some
again?
Epic social media thing.
Yeah.
This could be your destiny, Jamie Loftus. I don't know.
What
it's
if you
awesome.
Could you get Kanye West to attack the Olympic committee? Because I feel like that's
whoa, reverse
the,
engineer
the hypothesis
it.
Here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, actually, the figure skating.
Kanye West just goes on a fucking crusade.
The real, yeah. Oh, God.
Runs out naked in the middle of like this, whatever, I don't know what Olympic events there
I
are.
Want,
one of them.
One of them.
Yeah.
Kanye West challenges Johnny Weir to a fight. They're like the whole bit. Tara Lipinski gets involved.
Wow.
There
could be a lot. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. All right. Well, guys, stick around for a little bit. We'll be right back. And we are back now. Yesterday, President Trump had.
Whoa.
A, yeah, I'm sorry.
Whoa.
Uh-oh. Yep. Shots fired. Up. Cancel me. Cancel me. Mr. Donald Trump flew to Texas to meet with the parents of the victims of the Santa Fe High School shooting, which apparently like the media was not allowed to sort of be in the room as this happened. But, you know, suffice to say that clearly this was going to be a very odd Trump interaction because he starts off the whole trip telling people he's like, hey, we're going to Dallas. We're going to Houston. We're going to have a little fun today. Okay.
You're... Did he not like check his Google Calendar to find out exactly what he was doing that day? Like...
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But he had many other events. But you probably don't want to set that off when you're going to console some grieving family members of victims of a school shooting. So, yes, he got to Texas, and then he finally met at a Coast Guard hangar with some of the family members and local leaders just outside Houston.
You know, most grief therapists recommend Coast Guard hangars for...
Right, yeah, absolutely.
It's a good healing space.
It's the concrete and steel.
Hangars in general
very comforting.
Are,
yeah.
Very comforting.
Yeah.
Very comforting. So, I mean, again, like we probably could have figured if there was a script, it probably would have read like some bizarre version of The Office or something. So, according to Rhonda Hart, who was there at the meeting, who lost her daughter tragically in the shooting, was saying that like her conversation with Trump was very all over the place. According to her, she said Trump repeatedly brought up arming teachers, a policy proposal he has frequently promoted after school shootings. Hart, who is an Army veteran, also suggested employing veterans as sentinels in schools. No. But she said Trump's response was, "And arm them?" And she said, "No." And then Trump said, "Okay, but what about arming the teachers?" And then she goes on to say, it was like talking to a toddler, which I sure makes sense because...
That's a very generous...
Yeah, well, of course, you gotta...
Because toddlers have empathy, right?
And toddlers aren't...
Do they? Yeah, by that point,
they're
yeah.
starting to develop yeah. empathy.
And toddlers yeah. aren't, like, known for being addicted to guns.
Well...
Not, like, a common thing, none
Texas
about
is
them.
Different.
That's true. They're like sucking on a gun barrel.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So again, I mean, he further inserted his foot in his mouth because then he went on to just sort of like talk about the shooter like in a very insensitive way. The same woman, Rhonda Hart, was saying that he kept calling the shooter this wacky kid who was wearing a wacky trench coat. And you know, that sort of rubbed Hart the wrong way, and she was trying to be like, but, you know, mental illness is an issue.
Yeah.
She said at that point, she recalled, "I raised my hand and said, I have something to say here. Let's just get to the mental health part." She said that her daughter, who passed away in the shooting, had Asperger's syndrome and ADHD, had hyperactivity disorder, and took medicine daily. She said, "I told the president, I said, the shooter might have been depressed, but he wasn't wacky. But if that kid needed help, he needed to have proper access to it, meaning you shouldn't repeal the Affordable Care Act." One of his, like, you know, main sort of promises that he kind of made to improve people's access to healthcare. And she said, and then you need to get them the help they need and take away the stigma of mental illness. She said, then goes on to say, "I said all that and he didn't say anything. He was just like, so my gosh." Like in a situation like this, you really expect someone at the very least to be able to read someone's face and go,
yeah,
you know what, maybe I shouldn't have called this person wacky or whatever. And maybe, yes, I'm hearing you as a citizen of the concerned citizen of the country I'm the leader of, and saying, right. "Yes, I will take this on," or at least bullshit the person.
I mean, even the fact that she was patient enough to break it down for him
right.
and state all that obvious stuff
and not become overcome with emotion.
Yeah, to try to walk you through, like, no, it's not, mental illness isn't the problem. My daughter was mentally ill and she didn't shoot anybody. Like, the issue is, like, if there's an issue with mental illness, it's the stigmatization of it and
right.
the lack of care, treatment
options.
As
you just said by calling him wacky.
Actively, yeah. I hate being wacky. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
It's what can you even like say about something this horrible?
He's incapable of empathy.
I know that the day before or prior to the day before, there was a child who was allowed into the White House press briefing and was like, I don't know, like just sort of as some sort of outreach thing, and was allowed to ask Sarah Huckabee Sanders a question like amongst the regular White House pool of reporters. And so when it got to his turn, I think he's like a young kid. He asks, you know, like, "I'm a young student. There are a lot of school shootings. Students are afraid to go to school. Like, what is the White House? What is the president going to do that never happens again?" And you can see Sarah Sanders, she got like emotional. She like choked back tears, basically, to be like, it was weird because you could tell in that moment she really understood the weight of the question and then had to like pull it together to just kind of spin it and be like, "Well, you know, there's this thing we're looking at and we're going to do everything we can." It was just so empty, but it was a very bizarre moment to watch Sarah Sanders go from like, you could tell she
You
was
could see
torn.
The human being inside
and
of her.
And then she had to be like,
there are moments
snap out of it.
That she had
Sarah
to
Sanders
suck it.
Has like that where it's like, you're like, oh, she's glitching a little bit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you can tell beneath like however many layers of bullshit, there is a person that knows they're wrong, which makes what she does worse in a lot of ways because it's like, oh, you know exactly what you're doing. But it is kind of weird to be like, oh, Sanders has been hacked with empathy. Help.
Right,
right. Shut it down.
Exactly.
You can be angry at Trump in the same way that you could be angry at like a dog that was raised badly for biting somebody who came too close. Right. But like it's not he's incapable of moral judgments. He's like a broken thing. Yeah. But it's the people around him who like suck themselves inside of the shell and lie for him.
It'll wear on you.
Yeah.
It'll wear on you eventually.
There's nothing worse than watching someone enable in real time and you're like, oh, you know.
You know this is fucked up.
Yeah, and that's why people get upset. Yeah. Like Samantha Bee, who got in some mega hot water because she said cunt on TV. And I'm sorry, I should have warned people before I said it.
No.
I should have warned y'all that I would be using some insane language that people have never heard before on Earth. But if you haven't heard, Samantha Bee, who has a show Full Frontal on TBS, she was doing a segment about how inhumane the immigration policy is at the moment of separating children from their parents of immigrants who are trying to cross illegally. And she got to this image that like around this time, there was like a photo of Ivanka Trump with her daughter. And it really set her off because she was just kind of thinking like, here you are underlining the importance of your relationship to your child, yet your father is perpetrating this campaign of dehumanization of immigrants, and you're doing nothing about it. And she said, do something about it, you, quote, feckless cunt, end quote. And again, the right, they had a full tank because that outrage machine
you
was
can
fired
see
up.
The,
well,
because the
they lost Roseanne.
Yeah.
So they had to,
exactly,
they had
the
to try to
wars.
Take away someone else's TV show.
Which is why a lot of people also speculate that the Dinesh D'Souza pardon was Trump's way of bringing someone back on the air, essentially. Like, a lot of people were like, oh, he's trying to send a signal to Mike Flynn. But a lot of people also, like, also think about it like this. He's, like, one of the most inflammatory trolls to people on the left that by pardoning him was also kind of be like, yeah, see what I can do, too? Y'all can take Roseanne, but I can actually get people out of, like, you know, legal trouble.
Yeah, because it's like, it's easy to forget, like, Roseanne was such, like, it was such a hit in, like, middle America, too. So you lose this huge tool.
Yeah.
And you lose a huge tool in Roseanne herself.
Right.
Giant tool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it seemed like a lot of people, you know, were calling for her to apologize. And, like, I think Trump even demanded, like, the show be canceled. But, you know, trying to liken it to like, oh, Roseanne said something about a woman's appearance and blah, 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 and this and that. And like completely.
That's not the problem.
Exactly. Well, it's a complete false equivalency. What Roseanne said was blatantly racist.
Yeah.
Whereas Samantha Bee, first of all, she is a comedian who has a show where she is basically giving you her viewpoint every day. And yeah, okay, maybe the language may have been too extreme for somebody listening, but that's her prerogative as a comedian to express herself how she wants to. And I think, I don't know, it just feels like a very, I just don't know why a lot of people, like even on the left, were kind of jumping on her to be like, oh, she needs to apologize, this and that. I mean, I get it that you don't want to disrespect people, but when you are a human being who's empathetic and you're watching, like you're saying, someone enable something horrible in real time, it works on you.
Yeah, and why shouldn't we say horrible things about horrible people? Like Ivanka Trump is a feckless cunt.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Well, the thing that, like, Samantha Bee is, like, one of my heroes, always will be. I think she's the greatest. If you disagree with a word she uses, if you disagree with a word any comedian uses, fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. You don't have to, like that individual joke, and you don't need to, like, throw yourself on a sword for that. But just, it's so frustrating to, like, see, basically, they're like, well, Samantha Bee is like, she's not a feminist because she called another woman a cunt, and have the expectation be that, like, you can only be a pure feminist if you have no problem with any other woman in the entire world. Like, that's just not realistic, and that's not how the fucking world works, and that's the expectation of no man in the history of ever. Of like, well, if you are, like, a real, like, even with, like, fucking MRAs and shit, like, if
men's rights activists.
Yes, an expectation of someone who is like going for men's rights isn't that you like every single man and support every single man's agenda. That's kind of the opposite of what they do.
Their whole thing is tearing down men who are like living the life they want to also.
Exactly, exactly. And so that is still like an argument people would use of just like, well, clearly she's not what she says she stands for because she tore another woman down. It's like, yeah, she tore a mean-spirited, hateful. And I think Ivanka falls into that like category of someone who is doing everything knowingly.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Especially when you hear about how, like, you know, her business benefits too. Like, she's awarded all these copyrights because of her dad doing, you know, suddenly, like, sort of changing his strategy with, like, Chinese trade policy and things like that.
Yeah, she's super complicit.
Yeah.
And Samantha Bee's in the unique position to kind of be able to do that because there's only one woman allowed on Late Night. So she's
right.
the only one.
Right.
Miles, we were talking about this yesterday. There is, like, a recent terrible Vice article that came out that was, like, why Michelle Wolf will soon be replacing Amy Schumer in the hearts of women. And it's, like, because there can only be one.
There can only be one Highlander.
There can only be one. And there's like you're
two female comedians. Whoa.
They're
whoa.
Like, no, we have to ideologically murder the first one and then make way for the new one.
Oh, wait, no. And the ERA just got approved in Illinois. So now that we have, like, once the Equal Rights Amendment is fully adopted, we can have two women on late
night. Exactly.
That's what it says, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's written into the laws. Yeah.
It's just crazy. And now, like, Samantha Bee is sort of backpedaled on the statement a little bit, and that, I mean, that's her prerogative as well. It's just, it's really fucking frustrating. And as well, like, comparing it to the Roseanne thing, I mean, we don't even have to say it's like
they're not in the same galaxy.
It's because Roseanne is an individual, like, who and Samantha Bee, that's her show that went through writers. That was, like, a fought through thing with context and, like, watch
the
whole segment before you demand a take. Yeah, like, that went through, that was a thoughtful thing that was incendiary, but that is, like, what late night shows are supposed to be. And other late night hosts cannot say that because they are, first of all, dudes, and most of them are, like,
yeah, if a dude said that, that's
not gonna happen. The only misogyny that's on witness here is the fact that the word that she used caused an outrage because, like, that word freaks people out in this country. But if you call someone a dick or a cock, like, that's nobody cares. Like, that's, like, the mildest insult is to call someone a dick.
But a part describing a woman in the most vile way.
Yeah. Which it's not. It's like that's like the word the in the UK. Like, it's the most common thing.
Oh, yeah, or like Australia,
you'll
baby.
Yeah,
shout
exactly.
out to Australia, man, because the way cunt is thrown around so casual, I'm like, wow. And again, I think people use the word very frequently in this country, too, but it is this weird, like, the last frontier of language, too, that people be like, oh, this is a third rail word. The other thing that kind of bugs me about this is, A, we're talking about outrage about this woman having expressing her outrage over a inhumane policy that is treating immigrants like non-human, as subhuman, as just numbers to split at the border, right? And, you know, that was the point, and I think it's detracting from what her commentary was about. Also, the president of the United States is a pussy grabber guy on tape, on wax. We know about his history of misogyny. There are multiple reports of how he's regularly called women cunts off the record or just wherever. So there's this whole thing of just sort of like demand apology from this person on the left because they took a shot at somebody without holding anybody on their side responsible in any way for saying things in a truly derogatory way. But I don't know. Like, you know, this is the sort of culture war back and forth, the repartee that we're having to witness every day.
Yeah. And, you know, Roseanne's tweet was just hateful. Samantha Bee's statement had context, and it's just...
It was rooted in empathy and anger on behalf of people as opposed to Roseanne, which was just racism.
Yeah. I mean, fully, like, you know, like, Samantha Bee's not punching down with this comment at all, and the fact that it's being framed that way is just so frustrating. And the fact that, you know, it seems like she was kind of like pushed to apologize for it, which makes me really you just cannot win.
Like, I wish she had, like, obviously I think she apologized because, like, there's a show on the line, there's a lot of people's jobs on the line,
absolutely.
So I can't blame her for that, but, like, I wish she'd been stood up for by other people rather than saying, like, yeah, she shouldn't have said that. Like, but there's nothing fucking wrong with what she said.
Right. The fact that that had to happen in order for the show to continue is just so fucking typical. Yeah.
I guess that's where it's like, what are the spaces where someone can say that? I guess it's because when someone has the platform to do it, it makes it so much more that people, like, really are like, oh, God, because if that becomes, like, the natural description of this person, then the culture wars, like, what are we going to do? I'm not sure, like, at what point do you have an opinion that you can stand by, and even if it's vulgar, that it's fine, because really what's on trial is the vulgarity of it. It's not that she said something racist or xenophobic or anything like that. She was being vulgar in expressing her frustration at a human being that is
being inhuman,
very duplicitous and being like, oh my God, my daughter's the most important thing, but also stands by and, like, you know, is not really trying to be out there to advocate for children.
Yeah, Ivanka Trump is a cunt. Like, no problem. No problem saying that.
Yeah.
Look at the fucking record and then apply the word that best fits the actions.
If we were a nation that still had an attention span, I would suggest, like, some sort of mass movement where we all get, like, little beanbags, then we write the word feck on them, and we mail those en masse to Ivanka Trump, just so she's like, now you're not feckless. Now you've got thousands and thousands of beanbags that are like like overwhelming the White House's mail system.
Oh, yeah. I think this would be a good opportunity to just define feckless, because there were people on Twitter.com who were struggling with it.
Really?
Yes. Feckless, adjective, lacking initiative or strength of character, semicolon, irresponsible. This, yes.
That works.
Yes, that applies. You know.
It's the culture wars, baby.
There's only, you got to apologize because there's only room for one.
Yeah, only there's one woman.
Why Samantha Bee will soon be displacing Michelle Wolf, who just displaced Amy Schumer.
And then it will be you next, probably.
And then I'm going to have to displace five.
Actually, no, I think
they should have you all fight.
No, you know what? Jamie,
yeah.
I believe you are the prophecy that when you rise, you will also be the signal that multiple women can also occupy the same space in comedy.
There,
and then they'll know.
Well, we are. It's just, you know.
No, just this take is so absurd of like, they're like, well, I mean, she's the one. She is Neo in the Matrix.
I feel like when they finally decide there can be a second woman, they'll be like, well, we got to give Jimmy Fallon two more shows.
Right.
I mean, we got to even this out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Ugh,
Michelle Wolf is here to replace Amy Schumer in the hearts of women.
That's the actual headline?
That is the headline. And it's a piece written by a woman.
Oh,
and
no.
And I would love to have
talk
a chat
to her.
With her.
Yeah.
And
just what that means.
Be like, I have a few thoughts on why you might hate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to some lighter fare, okay? There you go. The panting has begun. Because, guys, I think we already knew this, but Facebook is fucking dead to the teenagers, basically. It is not the dominant social network that it used to be for kids aged 13 to 17.
Teen news?
Yep, teen news. Hey, fellow kids, y'all want to smoke some weeds? Yeah, they were looking at sort of a little demographic research here from the Pew Institute, and they found that YouTube, Instagram, and Snapchat have all surpassed Facebook in popularity, and all three are used more by teens. I don't think YouTube can really count as a social network because it's more about uploading videos more so than, like, Snapchat. You can actually, like, message each other more.
Well, there are communities that build inside of, like, teen YouTube is fascinating.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So
no, of course. But I think in terms of, like, how, you know, Facebook works, like, in terms of the sort of platform to exchange, like, sort of text-based information or whatever, I think is slightly different. I don't know if YouTube to Facebook is a one-to-one comparison in terms of, like, as a social network. But, yeah, no, absolutely. Kids are up there vlogging all day and, you know, showing me all the cool trends, like how to eat a Tide Pod properly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was doing it all
chopsticks,
wrong.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was looking like a fool.
Hot metal chopsticks.
I was using a spork from KFC. And they laughed at me on the playground. So one of the biggest sort of things that they showed, or what the more noteworthy metrics that they found, was that only 51% of these kids now say they use Facebook at all. And that's a huge drop off from 2015. 71% were using it at that time.
And I'm going to guess 90% of the teens using Facebook are posting pictures of themselves that, like, was like, look at me hanging out with my friends, not doing drugs, mom. Like, I'm a good. And then Snapchat's where it's the pictures of them, like, freebasing crack cocaine.
Not
Well, the way I use Facebook in the past year has changed pretty dramatically, too, where I used to be, like, posting for, like, you know, everyone I know.
Publicizing and
getting
your shit.
And now it's mostly just for my family to remind them that I have sort of a job.
Right.
Yeah. Facebook is my birthday machine for my family. It's where I'm like, oh, it's my mom was born today.
Right.
And, mom.
And I think it's still the best place for, like, events, too. Like,
yeah, no, not to say. I mean, clearly Facebook has its place because it is being utilized in all kinds of ways, good and bad.
Mostly bad.
I'm not defending Facebook at all.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is, like, the way kids are using it or the way they prefer to use social media isn't sort of in this same way that Facebook offers. Like, Facebook offers you the ability to just connect with people sort of as you need to, whereas the sort of egocentric version of social media, Facebook isn't just that place anymore.
It doesn't fit.
It used to be the place. Man, remember, like, when Facebook first came out and you would just upload whole albums of, like, a trip because you thought people gave a fuck that you went to Costa Rica once?
Yo, my semester abroad, well documented.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, I remember when the limit changed. It used to be 60 pictures because I had to make two albums for my junior prom. And then they later changed it to 200, which was great for when I traveled abroad. Plenty of completely blurry digital photos.
And was it the thing, like, I remember people would upload it and then you would see, like, the file name as, like, the captions, like, DSC underscore 2017.jpg. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
What was the worst picture you uploaded?
The worst picture. I was still into having a pet rock when I went on my.
Have
I ever talked to you about my pet rock?
No, but of course you have a fucking pet rock.
A pet rock. This is like a really weird formative. I had a few weird things I did when I was a kid that inform who I am as an adult. But when I was in sixth grade, I got a pet rock and I carried it around with me literally everywhere for like until my junior year of college.
So, and when you mean carried it around, like, is it pocket size or you had to be like, I got my pet, like, little mini rock?
It's like about, it's not a small rock. And so it was kind of heavy. I brought it on an airplane. Like, I had to, like, constantly explaining, like, no, this is my rock. And
look at it and be like, you're literally my rock.
My rock's name was Bert. My parents were freaked out at the time because it was like, early aughts, and they were like, "What? Okay, so Bert, like, they would misgender Bert constantly because
what gender was Bert?
What was
Bert was genderless, and
was it a they them sort of thing, or
It was just Bert.
It was just Bert. It was a rock.
It was easier for I didn't know anything about pronouns then. It wasn't in the national discussion. I was like, it's just Bert. Just refer to Bert as Bert, and brought Bert everywhere. There's a lot of pics of me wearing my back brace and holding my pet rock, literally throwing at birthday parties.
Pretty cool.
I feel like your childhood was transplanted from the 80s into the early
like scoliosis, back brace, pet rock.
I know, it's embarrassing.
And Punky Brewster t-shirt. I feel like, what is this?
I had a notebook I would carry around that this is like, if your kid does something like this, don't call it cute. It's acute OCD. Like, what it is I had a notebook and I would carry around, I developed a shorthand and I would write down what everyone I came into human contact with was wearing in this insane, like, shorthand.
Wow.
And my parents were like, Jamie wants to be a journalist. That's why she's always writing everything down. I was but I had notebooks full of. Anyways, what were we
I kind of had an OCD thing of like counting all the letters and words and being able to say it backwards instantly or being able to spell something backwards. And like, I would always challenge myself. I don't know if that's OCD, but
OCD
I was
fixed in children can be very deceptively adorable.
Right.
But if your kid's doing very weird, specific stuff over and over, take them to see a doctor. It's not adorable.
Oh, wow. So we found about Bert. And with that, I think we need to take a break. We'll be right back. And we back, and you know it's Friday, so it's time for Bloid Watch. There she is. So let's just get through this pretty quickly because we have some real messy stories to talk about. On the cover of Star, they're saying Kendall Jenner drug bust horror, but when you open up the the article, it's about like her boyfriend's family was like busted with drugs years ago. So tangential scandal.
Okay.
Not good
cover material.
No, but you know what is good cover material?
Hit it.
It's got Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt on there. And it just straight up says, Jen, yes, I'm pregnant with Brad's baby.
Gross.
Holy shit.
Direct quote.
Yeah, a direct quote. But then you read into it, they're saying both of their reps are like, they have not been seeing each other. They are not. There's no reunion. I don't know what you're talking about. But then they go in and they say, well, a source close to Brad also denies it. There are other people that say, like, it's just crazy that, like, they have basically been hanging out. Yeah, and then it'll then say, they'll put on some music, and sometimes Brad will whip up Jen's favorite guacamole.
Oh, honey.
It's really, aside from just someone describing that they believe that she's pregnant with his baby, it's not much there. So, again, thanks, okay. But, again, I like that we're being gaslit into thinking that we're going to see them back together again. I don't care.
I want Jen to start dating a Greg and then be like, yes, I'm pregnant with Greg's baby.
Pregnant and happy. Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, wow.
More excited for Gregnifer.
Yeah, Gregnifer. And also in the National Examiner, which is like the National Enquirer. It's the National Paper of Record for the elderly. what they put in here, Diana's ghost caught at Harry's wedding. And in it is like a very, like, there's nothing of to say that they actually have a real photo of it, but it's all based off a woman who says she claims she saw the ghost. So cool.
I buy it.
One woman who saw the apparition says, quote, "It was delicate, almost like a whiff of mist." Like a spooky fart. That brings us to some other royal wedding news. Not exactly Bloid Watch, but super producer Anne Hosnier goes, "Yo, did you hear about some dude who is basically scamming British media over the wedding?" Hit me with a quick story real quick so we can get into this other one.
Yes, so the Washington Post just put out this story that Thomas J. Mace Archer Mills, whose real name is Thomas Muscatello, from Albany, New York, basically pretends to be a British person, and his coverage of the royal wedding was all over British media. Like, he was in BBC, in The Economist, and he started the British Monarchist Society, which he is the chairman.
Uh-huh.
So he's like a source, I guess. And then apparently he wrote two books called To the Queen, A Royal Drinkology, and Their Majesty's Mixtures, When They Reign, They Pour, about drinks. And he started a cryptocurrency called Royal Coin.
Wait, now are those real books? Yes. And real books?
Yes, okay. Books that are for cocktail recipes.
Oh my God.
So he does have he actually does have an expertise in the monarchy in
right,
some way,
he
right?
But he pretends to be British, which he's not. And he apparently perfected his accent in high school doing a play, Oliver. So,
oh my God.
But nobody realized it.
Right. Please,
he scammed everyone.
See, this is why, and I've been saying this for years, we need a national registry of theater kids.
Right, exactly.
This has gone on too far.
Exactly. Yeah. This fuckery must stop. Mm-hmm. I love that he's this Tommy Muscatello from New York, baby. Yeah. Oh, you need to see the English accent here? I speak a bit of the Queen's English. Here we go. For me personally, when I look back at the record of blah, blah, it's wild to think that this guy could be modulating between those two.
I want to hear more about the origin story of he was the understudy for Oliver, and he's like, oh yeah, watch this.
Yeah,
and
watch. I'll go to England and I'll be the most English person ever.
Yeah, I can imagine his teacher sitting down and be like, you're just not good enough at believably impersonating a British person. He just stares. And I imagine the day that he's told this is the day Princess Di dies.
Right.
And he's staring at a television one day.
Right.
I'm going to get back.
He could
at
be
all
a Hitler type character who maybe because of his drinking or something, he wasn't able to quite get it together. And someone told him, you will never get there. Then he sobered up, got so wild with his accent. He's like, you know what? Now I'm going to go there, pretend to be an English person, and I'm going to dupe the media.
And in 10 years, he's going to be British Hitler.
Right.
Yeah. I was gonna say, you heard it here first. It's literally Trump getting roasted by Obama at the correspondence dinner.
Right.
The evil villain creation.
His origin pain is oh, God.
He
I was an understudy.
He met an elderly British man outside of Buckingham Palace.
I like Buckington.
Buckington Palace as a teenager and developed that relationship so far that the old man said he could call him grandfather.
Oh, good God.
So he started.
So this
seeds
is a long con.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I flipped around from hating this kid to respect
him. Yeah, but now I'm like,
because it's all about the long con. Yeah. A short con, I don't have any respect for, but somebody who puts in the groundwork.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he often appears in a bow tie, tweed jacket, and cap. So
amazing.
Okay, I'm against him again now.
A journey.
Yeah. How quickly that pendulum can swing back and
some
forth.
Some whiplash. All right, have you guys ever seen Buckingham Palace, by the way?
No, yes. I've seen Buckington Palace.
That's on
Crenshaw by Stalker.
Yes. That's the angriest I've ever been as a tourist, is walking up, because I was okay, you're going to see some cool buildings in London. Let's go see some cool. And it's the ugliest mansion I've ever. And it's one of those you robbed the whole world
for this.
There are wars going on right now that millions are dying in that started because you guys pilfered the world, and this is what you build for yourselves? At least make a nice palace.
What would you like? What's a nice palace?
Saddam Hussein's palaces. Monster, golden toilets and fucking lion statues.
Oh, you're saying if you're going to go there, let's go there.
If you're going to pilfer huge chunks of the globe and oppress people, at least build a cool palace.
Or update it, what I mean? So let me move on to one more story, because as a 90s kid, this really is an interesting story. So Isaiah Silva is the ex-husband of Frances Bean Love Cobain, or however interchangeable those last names are. And Frances Bean is the daughter of Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
And what had happened was shortly after their, they celebrated an anniversary, Frances gifted Isaiah Silva the acoustic guitar that Kurt Cobain played famously in that MTV Unplugged show, which many believe to be that was the very last guitar that Kurt Cobain ever played. Now, this is where the story starts getting weirder and weirder. So, according to Silva, Francis got hooked on some benzos, and their marriage started kind of falling apart. They tried to split amicably at first, but that became impossible because Courtney Love just sort of, I guess, increasingly became obsessed over this guitar and saying, like, this is actually our guitar. This is a family heirloom. You should not have that. It was never yours to begin with, blah, blah, blah. So as this sort of tug of war happened, would start over this guitar, he said slowly a plan to kidnap and murder him began to go down. Oh, now,
this is getting messier.
So her supposed accomplices, her alleged accomplices, are Sam Lufty, who is Britney Spears' old manager, and Ross Butler, who is in 13 Reasons Why, who's like an actor. Apparently, like, this guy was like middlemanning drugs to Francis or something. It's very weird. Silva claims that they hacked his iPhone and started impersonating him via the Messages app to make it look like he was suicidal to begin sort of laying the groundwork for them to kill him and make it look like a suicide. It gets weird. So now I'm going to quote from this article. Quote, the foursome allegedly moved to execute this plan on June 3rd, 2016, when they supposedly entered Silva's home and threatened him with rape and bodily harm in order to make him enter a car with them. A friend of Silva's who had been in the house and was forcibly removed by the foursome reportedly called the police, who caught up with the car. The suit alleges that Lufty, quote, hurriedly concocted a false story intended to prevent the LAPD from arresting them, end quote, and threatened to kill Silva's 7-year-old daughter if he didn't follow along. The police allegedly bought Lufty's story that he, Love, Butler, and Yuchtman, who was the guy driving the car, had just been playing a prank on their friend. The suit says, quote, it's believed based upon facts and evidence that Silva would have been taken to a secondary crime scene and murdered on June 3rd, 2016. So, yes, this whole thing.
This is what I wanted from Evil Genius.
Did they get the guitar from him?
No, I don't think so. I don't know what ended up with the guitar. But it's just a fucking wild story because a lot of people who are sort of in the line of thinking that Courtney Love had something to do with Kurt Cobain's suicide are like, you know, she's become very obsessed with like certain things like this, and this seems like par for the course for her. But I don't know. It's just a very crazy story because also, like, it goes on, the Silva claims that, you know, he was afraid to talk to the police because he believed Courtney Love and Sam Lufty controlled the police and the media or whatever.
Sam Lufty does not control the police.
Also, Courtney Love, you think she controlled the media? I mean, I think we saw those VMA awards when she pulled up drunk as fuck.
If Courtney Love controlled the media, she would make them be less horrible to her, which they always have.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone with less control over the media than Courtney Love.
That's why I'm a little sort of like, when I look at him, I'm like, you really think Courtney Love controls the media? That was like,
I believe his whole story up until that point.
Yeah, me
Nothing
too.
Nothing seems outrageous until he claims that she has control
of
the
media.
Yeah,
and that's why he didn't say anything sooner. But I guess, but you know, if your life is being threatened and you legitimately feel like that, then that puts you in a completely different set of circumstances. But
do you know, like, Sam Lufty has like such a history. This is the most, like,
to you this popped out,
right? Yeah, like, this is the most unhinged example of Lufty behavior that I've heard of to date. But he is always near women of stature, like pop stars, when they crash. Like, he was Britney Spears' manager, Umbrella, Bald era.
Baldbrella was his time?
Yeah, 07, 08. And they were in, like, a legal battle for a long time after that. He was with Amanda Bynes, managing her during her breakdown, and has worked with Courtney Love through, like, some other shit, too.
Right.
Like, he is always near the fire saying, like, I'm helping. And he is never...
Right.
He is a... Class A chode, and this is his wildest bullshit yet. But I don't know. It's weird because it's like Frances disappears from the story too, where they're like, her mom is doing it. I was like, does Frances have no say in what happens here? Is she not?
I don't know.
Where's she at?
It could just be like her. She's like, mom, I'm sorry, I gave him the guitar, and she's like, I'm gonna get it back.
I feel like I spend my life apologizing for my mom's wild behavior, and so it's like, why isn't Frances like? Listen,
like, to the patrons of Dunkin' Donuts for giving a sex talk to a child out loud in the middle of the store.
I'm sorry, my mom is screaming the sex talk at me
and using donuts. I
mean, it's got to be an éclair, right?
Yeah,
That's the donut you use to illustrate sex.
Yeah, an éclair, and then a
glazed one too.
Two.
You probably need to go to both Dunkin' and a Krispy Kreme adequately give the whole sex talk.
You can make it work at Dunkin'.
Just need a culotta.
Get something with filling, and you can really explain something in a wild way.
She's like, and this is a Boston cream pie.
Jelly, please.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yep.
Guys, it's been so fun. Now that, you know, because Daddy's away doing his experiments. For all of you guys wondering where Jack is, he will be back on Monday. But for you guys, let everybody know where you're at, where they can find you. Robert, let's start off with you.
Oh, yeah. You can find me on Twitter at IWriteOK, two letters. You can also find my podcast every Tuesday, Behind the Bastards.
Yep.
We just dropped a one on Harvey Weinstein. We talk about a lot of kooky characters.
And that is your guest monsters. Huh? Super producer Anna Hosnia on that one.
Yeah, Anna Hosnia is my guest on that one. Jamie Loftus is a guest on an earlier episode. And yeah. We've got another one dropping next week that's going to be super fun.
Can you tease that?
Shitloads of cocaine and machine guns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Good stuff.
Sounds like my weekend.
Oh, and vapes. Vaping.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, now you...
Yeah, now I mean, now the I'm millennials out. Are
you
on
You had
board.
Me at shit.
Jewel pods?
Jewel pods?
Jewel pods?
There you are.
I'm young.
I'm baby. Here's my Jewelpy. What about you, Jewelpy?
You can find Lil Jewelpy on... that's my new SoundCloud rapper Jewelpy. Name.
Jewelpy.
Little
Jewelpod.
You can find my Lil Jewelpod on Twitter at JamieLoftusHelp and Instagram... Jamie Christ Superstar, where I just posted the picture of me and my rock at the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, good. So that won't be in the footnotes, but you can look, go to her Instagram also, because it is a delight. And her stories, especially when you're on the road, very revealing. Like you really give us front seat to some of your interactions out there in the real world.
Unhinged.
Yes, unhinged. If you're looking for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. You can find the show, The Daily Zeitgeist. We are at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We are at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We got a Facebook page, but if you're 13 to 17, that don't even matter anyway. And also, if you're 13 to 17, listen to the show, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're going to be pissed about the Jewel comment.
Yeah, the Jewel pods. Woo, boy.
Don't talk about pods like that.
Yeah, but we a dual Jewel podcast. Anyway, bad joke. And if you're looking for us on the internet, you can go to dailyzeitgeist.com where we have, show links. You can find, little bits of information, including all the information we talk about in the show in our footnotes.
Footnotes.
There you go. All right. Just a little bit late.
It was an echo.
No.
Footnotes.
Look, I kind of hit you guys with a surprise on that one. Yeah, so get all that, including links to the song that we're going to write out on. Now, I know today's National Donut Day, and I would just predictably do a J. Dilla donut songs, but I won't because I play enough J. Dilla on here that people have given me the AKA Gray Dilla. But let me play something a little bit different. Just, again, we're going into the weekend, and I don't know when you're listening to this. If you're listening Saturday morning or whatever, or right now, take this with you into your weekend. But this song is called Gems by Iman Omari. It's a cool track. Again, sample-based hip-hop. I love it. One of my favorite art forms. You should like this, too. And with that, you guys have a great weekend. Have a great party. Whatever y'all doing, enjoy yourselves. Add to a atmosphere of positivity and acceptance if you can. Keep that in your mind's eye as you go forth this weekend.
Don't be
and
a feckless cunt this
don't
weekend.
Don't be a feckless cunt. Have some empathy.
Be effectful.
Yeah,
cunt.
Be effectful. Yeah. And don't be a chode, okay? And with that, we'll see you Monday. Have a good weekend. Later.
Bye.
Bye. Dropping gems.
Can't cut corners, no cleats if the heat seek you. Too fast, too bleak for the Jeep Eagles.